You're listening to episode 195 of Women Worldwide. You've probably heard about CX or the customer experience, but how much have you heard about IX or the internal experience? Well, it's the leaders with an IX mindset that can shift their company's culture. Stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning into another episode of Women Worldwide. We really appreciate that you take the time every week to listen and share the stories of the amazing people who come on this show. You're helping to amplify their voices, their purpose and passion, and that's really helping to create more impact and to make a difference in this world. All right, well, let's get right to today's topic because we have two special guests joining us on the show. Our topic is culture in the organization and the internal experience. You hear a lot about CX, right? It's all about the customer experience. Well, should it really start with the customer? Maybe it needs to start with your own people. So this is the perfect segue to my special guests, who are Meg Mankey and Dr. Rachel M.K. Headley. They are the co-founders of Rose Group International, and they're also the authors of the newly released book. Really excited about this one. IX Leadership, Create High-Five Cultures and Guide Transformation. Rachel is the senior partner and CEO of Rose Group International. And Meg is also a senior partner, and she is the COO. So their bios are way too long for me to start picking out things. Lots of accolades around these two women. So I think it's best that they share their journey with you. Rachel, Meg, it's great to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It's so nice when two partners, right, can come on together. And I guess that's where we should start. The two of you coming together. How do two professionals from completely different backgrounds come together to start a business and to write a book? Meg, why don't you jump in and start us off?
Sure. Rachel and I met at, or kind of got to know each other when we were floating around the same circles in a local women in leadership group. And they do a lot of conferences, big conferences for the whole state, really, of South Dakota, and do lots of facilitated training. And Rachel and I both did some of the facilitation for that training. And so anyway, we'd see each other at these events and visit about different challenges and things that we had. And we kind of started commiserating about, man, is work really always this bad for people, or is life this hard? And we don't think it should be, or that it should feel like that. So anyway, but that conversation created a monster of excitement, really, for us and all of our concepts in IX leadership.
And how about you, Rachel? Want to add to that a little bit about the way that you met Meg and formed this beautiful partnership?
Yeah, well, for us, it was, for me, I was already working for myself and I already had a company and was doing that full time, and I was doing corporate consulting. And my background is satellite science and leadership, in, like outer space satellites, kind of satellites. And
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. I still brag a lot about it, even though I have a
As well, you should.
but, you know, in that kind of big environment, big budgets, big teams, I really started seeing the difference between team success and why in the same organization with the same senior leadership, how some teams could thrive and other teams were just really miserable. And so I started getting really interested in what leadership choices was really impacting the team. And some teams seemed to do better with change and some teams just hated it. And why? And even in the high performing teams, there was differences. And so I was really curious about this a lot. And I understood boots on the ground as part of the leadership team for the Landsat satellite mission. I understood boots on the ground, how to navigate this a little bit intuitively, but I also knew there was a lot more going on. And so when I met Meg, and Meg was this really intelligent, dynamic, no BS kind of HR executive professional, and she has a master's in strategic leadership, and she really loves the literature of that world. And where I really focus on how do I get things done with this team and make them feel great and execute, she's really understands like what motivations are and how to connect with people. And so it was just really such a great opportunity for both of us to have find this other person that had the same drive to change the world in this really exciting way, but have to completely complementary backgrounds and experience.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you guys definitely complement one another. And that's so important when you have a business partner, but yet you still have the same goal and mission. What's interesting is that, you know, the question, Meg, that you first started out with, where you said, is work always this bad? Or does life have to be so hard? A lot of it, because we work is a big part of our day. You know, it starts in the organization. And I kind of wonder how your new book came to life. Was it seeing what was going on in organizations, feeling the pain of people who were asking that question? And why did you write this book?
Yeah, well, mostly just because I wanted my name on a book cover. I'm just kidding.
That's not a bad reason.
Right.
Yeah. Rachel and I started talking a lot about, we had a lot of concepts that we developed right off the bat about, you know, it's one thing to have a lot of theory around leadership and say, oh, well, this servant leadership or transformational leadership is a good way to lead. And you can read this book and it'll tell you kind of the theory behind it. But we said, well, yeah, these leaders, though, that, I mean, my gosh, we're all drinking from a fire hose all the time and checking our emails. I just read something the other day that we check our email, subconsciously we check our email like 100 and some times a day.
And that's frightening.
Yeah, it is frightening. Well, I started counting mine and I'm definitely fall well within that range. So I'm like, oh my gosh, Sunday's a no phone day. Anyway, people are too busy to try and figure out how to implement a theory. And so we said, well, let's develop some concepts and some practical application, something that people can actually use. And then as we generated all these concepts, we said, well, gee, wouldn't it be great if we had a book with all this? So then they could just actually read it because people are traveling all the time. And, you know, well, let's make it about the right length for a plane ride, something that's easily digestible. So that's kind of how we landed on the book. And our real goal is to make a global impact. And we thought that was probably the best way to get that done.
Yeah, a book where you could actually action something, I think, is really helpful, because the theory is great and it frames out concepts. But when you can really dive in and get some takeaways that you can use, that's so important. So, Rachel, writing this book with Meg, was there a certain reader in mind? I mean, is it the leader of any industry, any size company? What would you say?
Well, it's really funny because we get that a lot. You know, marketing world, they want you to have an avatar. Like, what's your person? Who is it? And what's their name? And then where do they work? Who they work out? All that stuff. And, you know, the kind of joke that I tell a lot is everybody I sit next to on an airplane that I have a conversation with about what we do, they need this book. And so that's the really both the wonderful and challenging part of what we do is that we have not yet met a team in any vertical that doesn't need something about our book. We developed a new way to look at not necessarily we don't personality type because we feel like that's been misapplied in business.
Right.
It's not about personality. It's how Meg wants to work with Rachel, wants to work with Steven, right? And how we can work as a team. And that team notion has really been missing in a lot of leadership training. And so what we did is we took, what kind of environment do you like to work in? You know, we love chaos. Some people hate it. And
right.
how do you help those people work together and not drive each other crazy?
Well, you're speaking to, so your environment, and every organization creates an environment, but it's really the people that make up the culture, right? So we're definitely talking about culture here. And I know personally from my work in communications and change management that culture is really hard to shift sometimes because it's just so rooted in the way the teams operate, the way they organize and operate. So how do you actually shift the mindset and the culture, and where do you begin? Or is this just way too hard of a question to even ask? So Rachel, you jump into that.
No way, man. We love this question.
Okay, great.
No, this is the crux of it. I think the reason that we need this at this time is that if you noticed over the last few years, culture is becoming more and more of an emphasis. You know, we have these trendy places to work, Google, Amazon, that have this culture that people love. We've heard, you know, lately that maybe there's some holes in some of the way they do things. But really, the culture is ours to create. We say that a great culture, a great internal experience is designed. It doesn't just happen. And so the real challenge about changing the culture you have is understanding how individuals think about and react to change. And a lot of people, that change feels like chaos to them. And people do not like chaos, generally speaking, about 65% of people. And so you have to understand, you can't just throw something new out there or put new values on the wall and hope they all go for it.
Right. Hope it sticks.
Yeah. You really have to make them understand why it's important to them. Like, we worked with a healthcare system, and one of their strategic goals is cost savings, right? Well, and that makes a lot of sense to the guys up in the, and the women up in the business executive suite, right? But to a nurse in the neonatal floor, what does that mean? Does that mean there's less nurses? Does that mean there's less medical equipment? Well, no, all they want to do is love and care for those babies. And so you have to relate what you're trying to do to the people in your office. I mean, we're really trying to bridge the gap between leaders and their people. That's really the first thing.
So I'm going to jump on that. This one's for you, Meg. So if people you have to make people understand, as Rachel was just explaining, as a first step, so they can buy into this. But what does it actually take to get your people to go into battle for you? So there's all levels of understanding, and when you're shifting that mindset, but the very top level is that ambassador, right, who would do anything to be a part of that team and that culture. So what would you say to that, Meg?
Yeah, the culture that I use a lot in explaining, you know, or talking with an executive team about what they're looking for is, think about a college sports team. So let's pick on my boyfriend's favorite team is the Notre Dame, the Fighting Irish.
Right.
I mean, those people paint their bodies. It's freezing cold and snowing. They don't have any clothes on. They've got snot running from their nose. They've spent $25 on a foam finger that they're drunk and will lose somewhere. I mean, but they, and it doesn't matter if that team is winning or losing, they are screaming and bleeding hearts until the very end.
Right. Uber fans right there.
And what are they fans of? They're fans of the thing that it is. And so organizations have to find the thing that it is. Now, it's not quite as much fun, you know, like let's pick on a manufacturing firm who's making widgets. It's not quite as much fun to find the thing that it is for an organization when somebody's going to work and doing their actual job every day. But the leadership team has to believe so passionately in the way that they're changing the world and improving the world, and then do a really great job, which is what we help them with, in explaining that in language, as Rachel said, that their teams understand. And then that way, those teams will go into battle with you no matter what you decide to do. And the other thing that's really, really important maybe even more important than finding the thing that it is making sure that you've developed trust. And that all comes out in making sure that you're transparent with your people. And I think that's actually the thing that most organizations probably struggle with, because there is a certain amount of information that you do have to keep, keep your hand close to your chest on as an executive team. But I think it's really important that wherever possible, be super transparent with your workforce, because that develops trust, and then trust develops that linking arms and going into battle together.
Right. Trust and transparency through communication. So you talked about, I sort of heard a barrier there, communication, if you're not gaining the trust. Are there any other barriers that would prevent a culture from taking root and getting these uber champions on the inside?
Yeah, there's actually a lot. And our biggest one that we face is people's discomfort with change generally. And what really is powerful about what we've developed is that we have developed four types of people and how they like to work. And once you understand what types of people you have in your organization in the sense of the work environment that they prefer, then you understand how they move through change. So you and I and Meg are probably all fixers, which means that we want to change the world. We like a little chaos in our lives, although you have a stopwatch out, so you might be a little more order oriented.
Yes.
So the chaotic people, the people that like that freedom, we call it freedom, people that like that freedom in their day, they're going to jump on that change and love it. They might even want to help you figure out how to change more. But the people that don't like that chaos, they really, and it's not because they're being jerks, they really feel like the way things are just fine, and they're going to live with it for the rest of time. And so if you understand how those guys and women work together and how their brain works, then you can help move them through the transition much faster and with much more excitement, because anxiety around change can be tweaked just a little bit to become excitement around change. But you got to kind of know who you have and what strategies of that communication that you can employ to get them there.
I think it's really important that you just said that anxiety can become excitement. And this is a life lesson, right? Doesn't, even if we're not talking about culture and people in the organization and shifting, anything you do that's new, that is stepping out of your comfort zone, when you get that feeling of, oh gosh, I got to do this, you turn that into, oh, I'm going to do this. And you just have a whole different perspective, right?
Yeah, it's really powerful. In fact, people tell us all the time, like you mentioned in the front of the show, that change is hard. People don't like it. You know, really, change is thrilling. Change is thrilling. If you think about all the big decisions you've made, whether it's go out on a first date or get married or have a child or buy a fancy new car or buy a house or whatever big decisions you've made that make you feel that little anxiety. We just hired our first full-time vice president of sales.
Mm, that's exciting.
It's exciting. It's a little, makes us a little anxious.
Right.
A team member, and now we're all, it's a big change for us, but we're so excited about it. But people don't like to be anxious. They don't like to walk on eggshells. And so if you give them the reasons to be excited, they will be excited. And we've seen literally from one day to the next, teams pivot from just disastrous anxiety and unspoken conversations. And then you talk about the things and you get them excited. And the next day, they're completely different. And so it actually isn't as hard as we make it out to be. The structures of our companies make it hard. We don't have to make it hard.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the institution itself, for as long as it takes for the culture to root, do you think, and I don't know, Meg, maybe you might want to jump in on this, does it necessarily take that long to see a new transformation?
Oh, depends on the size of the organization, depends on the buy-in from the top and then all the way through. It depends truly on that kind of the health of the organization in terms of how big of a mess are you, how big of a mess is the organization when you decide to implement a change. But the reality is that once enough people, and enough could maybe just be three, you know, at the executive level, and then it filters down from there. But once enough people grab onto that change and refuse to use words like can't or this is hard, or, you know, like they always just talk about this is an opportunity for us. We can be innovative. We have new ways to think about things, kind of a new lease on life perspective. Everyone will start eventually flipping over, and it really wouldn't take that long. And I guess, what is that long? Maybe a couple months in a huge organization, maybe a couple days or a couple weeks in a mid-sized organization. It could happen in one meeting. I mean, Rachel and I have seen it happen in a meeting before. So it really depends on the buy-in and the health of the organization, but it doesn't have to take a long time like we all think it does.
That's fantastic, because then it doesn't seem so daunting, this change and transformation. Meg, Rachel, I'm just going to ask you to hold your thoughts for a moment so that I can share a little bit about our sponsor, who is PrepDish. Have either of you ever heard of PrepDish?
I haven't.
Yeah, I have not. And it sounds like it's going to make my life easier. So please tell us more.
I love that you said that. So let me tell you a little bit about PrepDish. It's a subscription-based meal planning service that saves you a lot of time and helps to make your dinners a lot more appealing and really delicious. So I'm learning through firsthand experience. For me, PrepDish took away a couple of one question and one statement that I heard far too often. The, oh, what's for dinner? And that would be at 5 o'clock and I would never know. And then it was the, oh no, not that again. So let me tell you a little bit about PrepDish and how it works. Every week you receive a weekly meal plan with a grocery list. You know exactly upfront all of the ingredients that you're going to need. So you can prep for that week, and you just go and you do your shopping. You set aside 2-3 hours to prepare everything in advance. So prepping on a Sunday means you'll be set up for the entire week. I have found recipes that I really love and I've added to my favorites list. So I want to share with the two of you. If you like kale, the kale salad with pomegranate and avocado. And I also really like the mushroom and kale frittata cups. So yes, I am into kale. And I guess you can tell that. But you might want to check out some of the other recipes. They're really good. If you think about it, PrepDish helps your meals to be easier. Mine are. And you're saving time. And that is a precious commodity. So with my schedule, a little bit crazy all the time, I let PrepDish do the planning for me. But here's the best part. Women Worldwide listeners can take advantage of a PrepDish offer. So you can go to PrepDish.com/worldwide and get 2 weeks of PrepDish free. So I think you should try it. I know you're going to love it. PrepDish.com/worldwide. And I'm really excited for listeners to try PrepDish because it's that easy. All right, let's just dive right back into segment two. Here's where we're going to pivot a little bit more to you ladies to get to know you professionally and to kind of find out what's on your minds. So I would like to know, because we certainly talked about how you came together as partners, the way that you met and how you complement one another, but it does beg a question. Do you always agree? And if you don't agree, how do you handle differences?
I'll take that one, I guess, first, and then Meg can offer her rebuttal, which is will absolutely happen. No, you know, the fun thing about having a partner is the thing I love is that A, you share all of the highs and lows, right? So you're not in it alone. And that really speaks a lot to how we're wired again to our, so I see everything through culture types now. It's our typing system. We love people. And so we live to help others. And so having someone in the fight with you is critical. But we don't agree on a lot of things. And so but that's the fun part. We, again, it's that attitude of growth and valuing other people's perspectives. And, you know, I always say that I like to be the dumbest person in the room. And because I am an expert in some things, but I'm an idiot in others. And so I want to be surrounded by people that disagree and that challenge my assumptions and that tell me when I'm not thinking about things in the way that they do and how do we figure out how to get there. So, you know, it's really a collaboration. And sometimes one of us just has to give up our opinion because, you know, some things you can't compromise on, like a client that you might want and the other person might not want to take on or whatever it might be. So I love it. I really do.
Yeah, I think there's a trust that has to build up because just like you said, Rachel, if you're going to, whether it's give up or give in, because there is no real compromise in the middle, you trust the other person. Meg, maybe you want to jump in.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm Irish, so I just like a good argument because. and Rachel's a scientist, and she likes to argue about everything. So, you know, that's typically how we communicate is basically by arguing. And now we've curated it. We have it down to a fine science where, you know, it's not an argument. It's really just a discussion about how we're going to proceed forward. And so, you know, yes, we both think it's important because that's what really helps us grow is to discuss things and understand other perspectives. I think the one thing that really keeps us going on the right path, even when we don't agree on everything, is that we always bring ourselves back to what's our real goal. Our real goal is to make an impact in the world and how people see their jobs and how business is done. And then, you know, what are our other goals and our four core values within our organization? And so then we say, all right, well, based on that, what can we agree will happen? So, yeah, we love to argue and it serves us really well.
No, it's great that you have that kind of dynamic. After all, you know, it just brings I think of families, how sometimes families get together and even though they're all arguing and talking over one another, there's still love and admiration and, you know, it's just a way of communicating. But the fact that you can be so grounded and always bring it back to your goals and core values is definitely how you're successful and how you can move forward. And on that note, I'd love to ask a question because as entrepreneurs in business, there are those ups and downs, but maybe each one of you can comment on what has been the most rewarding part of being in business. So Rachel, that's tossed to you first.
Well, the very biggest thing for me is getting to choose my destiny, right? Choose your own adventure. We get to decide what we're doing when, and don't get me wrong, there's still the daily grind and the things that you don't want to do, but you choose to do it. And so that's incredibly empowering. I think though, the most rewarding part is, I'll just share a little example of something that we just found out about yesterday, I think, maybe the day before, was we found out that two people last week that we know as colleagues and sort of they're totally embedded in JOBs. One is in a vertical, like a fundraising vertical, and the other one is in a manufacturing vertical. So completely different kinds of humans, completely different leaders and styles of leaders. And they went in for job interviews for either promotions and outside their company. And they took our book with them.
Oh.
And to talk about how, as new leaders in the organization, they were going to create better cultures and better teams because they believed in what we had to say and that they wanted to share that. And they actually took and shared that book with their interview panels.
That's huge.
It is so huge and such an honor.
Right.
This is the most stressful time in their career, maybe their life. And they took us with them as having their back. And I just thought that was the biggest compliment I think I've ever gotten. This is awesome.
That is such a gift. Amazing. Meg, how about you? Can you top that?
That one's kind of a show stealer.
Yeah, that totally is. I mean, it affects you too. It could be your most rewarding moment as well.
Yeah, it actually is my most rewarding moment current anyway. But I would say, since we're on a podcast called Women Worldwide, I grew up in a small ranching community in Western South Dakota, oldest of three girls. And of course, my folks never said you couldn't do anything. I mean, I still, to my demise sometimes, especially in hot yoga, like I still think I can do everything, anything I want to. And, you know, but the world doesn't always treat you like that's possible, especially if you're a female and especially if you're trying to make it in the business world. And I think the most rewarding thing about being successful, both in a career and as an entrepreneur, and as a female, is to, you know, and with that book coming out, is like, yeah, you're damn right, I am awesome. And so I guess I think outside of all the amazing ways we're impacting people's lives, professionally and personally, really the way what has been shown to me is that perseverance does pay off, and that if you're smart and motivated and work hard, you can do literally anything you want to.
I agree. And you need the passion and the perseverance. So I mentioned the ups and downs before, and clearly what you've pointed out are the highs, the rewards. Meg, you mentioned success. So what about challenges? Would you share, and Rachel, we'll start with you. What do you think has been maybe your toughest challenge or challenges as an entrepreneur, a business owner, an author?
You know, it's really hard to, I think when I first started, and actually I hit 5 years October 1st, which I failed to celebrate adequately, kind of passed me by without really noticing. But, you know, it's those first starting out moments when you're not really sure. It's really about not being confident in what you have to offer and not being sure that anyone's going to give you money to support how you think the world can be changed. And you know, there's a lot of just self-chatter, internal head talk about that. And then, of course, there's always the anxiety about money, right? There's that money mindset.
Right.
And, you know, I left that sort of poverty, the concern that I might not be able to make my mortgage payment. I left that quite a while ago. And that happens when you first start, because you have to convince your own brain that it's going to work. But for today, I think the biggest challenge was honestly taking on Meg as a partner, in the sense of, you know, I was my own boss. I just did whatever the hell I wanted. And that was the thing. And actually I was quite successful, and I was really lucky. I was a solopreneur, but you know, I felt like that wasn't enough. So at some point I felt like, okay, I've gone over the hurdle of, can I make it, to, I want to make a bigger difference. And so deciding to bring Meg on, that was really a tough choice, or invite Meg to partner with me, because I knew I wouldn't get, there is a limitation with more people. Plus I had to make twice as much money.
Right.
Meg is going to be on the team. So that part, but scheming about how you're going to do that together was way outweighed the potential anxiety and stress about, are we going to make it as two people? Because I wasn't willing to have my income. And so that meant we had to double our income. But it also meant that if we're going to double it, why not quadruple it? Why not 10x it? And so we actually ended up with these ridiculous, at the time, not so ridiculous now, revenue goals that we now, every day we think about, we're like, okay, will this get us closer to our real goals, both revenue and passion goals?
Right.
And it's really exciting. And so the hard stuff always leads to exciting stuff.
Definitely. I so appreciate your transparency about taking on a partner, because that is always it's a big decision, especially if you're a solopreneur. So Meg, what would you say about tough challenges as an entrepreneur, business owner, in the past or now?
Well, you know, I think, like Rachel said, there's the stuff that's every day. And even, it's kind of funny how your perspective sort of roots itself in whatever challenges you're having at the moment. So, you know, you go from feeling like there might be some starvation or famine, can't make your mortgage or whatever, to, gee, I don't know if I have enough money in my savings account to feel comfortable, because I'd really like to make, you know, an extra 3 payments on my house this month, or, you know, whatever it is. So one of the challenges I think that exist is that challenges always exist. And I think a lot of people get it in their head that, like the Damon Johns of the world, don't worry about anything. Oh no, you're still worrying about something all the time. And whether it's figuring out how to create a new product or make your car payment, it doesn't really matter. There's always something to be thinking about. And so that's a challenge to me, that because I'm a fixer and I'm a preemptive fixer. So I want to fix things before they're broken. And so the fact that something's always sort of challenging, I won't say broken, but something's always challenging, it's like, man, I just feel like I can't ever get ahead of the bus. So I guess that would probably be one thing that's challenging. The thing to me, I suppose, that's been the most challenging is thinking about how to make sure, you know, as an entrepreneur and as an entrepreneur with a business partner, how do you make sure that you're contributing all the time and making sure that everything is moving forward and that the wheels don't fall off the bus? And so always thinking about that, and because there are days where there isn't, you know, like we're always busy, but there are days where there isn't a lot to be done. And so I came from a corporate world where there's always something to be done because, well, and I was in HR, so someone's always making it has to be fixed. So to go from that environment where you're literally working or doing something or fixing some problem or planning some event or whatever all day long to having time to sit down and really curate your thoughts and think about, you know, what's going to happen next, those days are challenging for me.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing that. And, you know, as I was listening to you and also thinking about what Rachel said, challenges can be stressful. And this is where I would love to hear how you kind of manage that stress. Are there certain stress busters? Because, Meg, like you said, there's always going to be challenges. And, you know, I think they're supposed to be there because you never want to stop. You keep every hurdle you jump over, there's something in the bigger picture and you're closer to your goal. So what about stress busters? Rachel, can you jump in on how you're managing stress?
The one thing I protect viciously is music. I sing in a small chamber chorale, and music is my drug of choice.
That's beautiful.
I love it. And singing is really, like, I can listen to music and it makes me happy. But for me, singing with a group and being part of a bigger group, and I do solo work too, but I just, there's something yummy about music and chords and chord progression that just really hits that dopamine trigger for me. And so every Tuesday night, I don't care what, if the world is falling down, I am going to choir.
That's great.
And I protected that for like 10, it's like I've been in it 10 years now, and I don't think I've missed, if I'm in town, I have never missed a rehearsal. So that's how, what I do.
That is awesome. I mean, I love to sing too, but I don't think anybody wants to hear me sing. Where I think in your case, you probably have a beautiful voice if you're singing that.
It's taken a while. It's like anything, you know, it's with practice you get better. When I first started 10 years ago, I had not sung I haven't sung in a group since I was in like freshman year of college, which was a long time.
Oh my.
Don't be afraid to go try it. They'll love you for it.
Okay, Meg, how about your stress buster?
Yeah, my stress buster is running. And if I can get out on the trail, and preferably somewhere where there aren't other human beings or like human noises, cars and things, it's like the whole world sort of fades away and I don't think about much of anything. But that's when I also have my best aha moments. So running is my drug of choice. And wine never hurts.
Yeah, that was probably number two, I guess, wine.
Yeah, Meg, hopefully the wine is after you're running and not before.
Generally, yes.
Yes, let's get that timing right. Okay. Well, thank you for sharing, Stress Busters, because women worldwide listeners, everybody out there has stress. So it's always good to hear from others who are super busy entrepreneurs, hectic days with challenges, what you're doing to combat stress. We'd love to ask you an advice question at this point from both of you. What's your best advice to other professionals who are looking to make that shift, let's say shifting culture and actioning behaviors to reach your goals? So Rachel, what do you think?
For me, it's a lot of people are afraid of change. And my advice to those women is to start small. you know, so many people wait and are afraid of these huge things like leaving their job or getting a new job or going out on their own. You know what? Don't take it on so massively. Start small. Go to that first choir rehearsal. Go to a new cafe. Go to a new networking event. Do something small that feels challenging to you, but doable. And then do that once a week or every other week. And over time, you're going to feel much more confident that you can take on new things, that you're not, even though you're afraid or nervous, that it's all going to be better and you're going to grow in your self-confidence about new things. And then when you want to build that culture, when you want to go to your leader or be that leader, it feels much more approachable and less scary. And so a lot of things stop, the fear of failing stops a lot of people from doing everything. So that's where I would start.
Yeah, it sounds like you're getting some small wins, right, along the way to build up confidence. So start small.
Absolutely. And then celebrate those. We always wait to celebrate until we get the building built. You know, celebrate the first floor or celebrate the fact you have indoor plumbing or whatever it is. Like celebrate along the way so that you don't wait to feel great about what you're doing.
I love that. That's so important every day to celebrate. Meg, what about you? What's your advice?
My advice would be to really know what your core values are, the things that are important to you, and just don't ever bend on them. And that might mean that you leave a job or a company that you thought you'd be with forever and saw this really great career path. Or it might mean that you start your own business and you're scared to death. That sounds obviously like I'm reciting my own history. But I guess I just always, people would say to me, especially when I was working in corporate America, you can't say that, or you can't do that, or you can't ask for that, especially as a woman. You can't ask for that. You can't ask for a raise or whatever. I always did, because I thought, well, you know, the worst they can say is no. And I've been told no once in a while, but you just don't know if you don't ask. And then you start to harbor some bad feelings. And then before you know it, you don't believe in the change that you're trying to make, either in your own life or in your career or in your organization. So I would say, you know your core values, trust your gut, and just go for it. Because at the end of the day, as long as you're feeling good about what you're doing, the rest of the world will kind of float along with it.
Well, that's really good advice. It sounds like you're saying be true to yourself.
Yep.
Well, ladies, thank you so much. Excellent advice from both of you. This is a super easy question. Whoever wants to jump in, where can people find out more about you, your work, and your new book?
Well, I will. If you want to check out the book, ixleadership.com will get you where you need to go to get the book and our website. And to learn more about us, we're pretty active on social media. So you go to LinkedIn or Twitter, you're going to find us out there, sharing both our work and other people's great work and some of the challenges and questions that we have, and love to hear from people at those places too.
Fantastic. Rachel, Meg, thank you so much, both of you, for taking the time to be my special guest today on Women Worldwide. We so appreciate your insights on culture, change, the IX, you know, and leadership. We've learned a lot from you today. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. It's really fun.
Yeah, it was our pleasure.
Great. Well, thank you. And I also want to thank our sponsor, PrepDish, for sponsoring this episode of Women Worldwide. And don't forget, listeners, you can go and get your free 2-week trial. Just go to prepdish.com/worldwide. And also to all of you listeners out there tuning in every week, helping to amplify the voices, the purpose, and the passion. I personally want to thank you for fueling Women Worldwide, our network, with energy and a lot of inspiration. And remember, you can always tell us how you're feeling. You can go on iTunes, rate the show, give us a shout out on Twitter, or let us know how you're feeling on Facebook too. Okay, friends, until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.